Welcome to the Army Resilience Roundup podcast. I am your host, Lataria Walker. The Army can be a tough profession. Mix in additional responsibilities like leading troops, attending college, maintaining a home, parenting, keeping up with finances, basically living life. How can we successfully manage everything? How can we not just cope, but learn, grow, and thrive? Resilience. That's it. Resilience is the ability to persevere, adapt, and grow in dynamic or stressful environments. Resilience encompasses internal motivation, persistence, and how soldiers revitalize, recover, and adapt in order to respond constructively to challenges in their daily lives. Training and education empowers leaders and soldiers to demonstrate resilience. When individuals gain experience in applying these skills, it enables cohesive team building and drives readiness. The Army Resilience Roundup podcast is a place where you can find resources that will help you maintain your resilience. You are resilient. Welcome to the Army Resilience Roundup podcast, episode 9. I am Lataria Walker, your podcast host. Today, our guest is Sergeant Major Justin E. Shad, Director of Emergency Services, Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. This episode's topic is the unspoken struggle. Sergeant Major Shad will delve into the taboo topic of substance misuse by sharing his story of overcoming alcohol misuse. He'll also shed light on the challenges service members face today, and he'll explain what it means to live sober. In this discussion today, he will also address the stigma around substance misuse, how to recognize the signs of alcohol misuse, how to support someone struggling with substance misuse, and programs and resources that are available to those seeking help. In addition, he will tell a real-life story about how soldiers identified and handled a misuse problem. Sergeant Major Shad, thank you for joining us today. Please tell us a bit more about yourself.
Thank you, Ms. Walker. I appreciate it, and I appreciate the opportunity to share my story. So I came in the military, joined the Army in 1996, and I've served in various leadership positions from team leader all the way up to brigade command sergeant major. Currently serving, as you heard, as the Director of Emergency Services, Sergeant Major, here at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. I've been married to my beautiful wife, Erica, for the last 25 years. I have two grown daughters, and we get a pack of dogs, four dogs at home.
So you're quite busy these days with those four dogs, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Sir, thank you for your service and your commitment, and thank you for agreeing to this very transparent conversation today. Let's begin our discussion. Please tell us your story and your journey to sobriety.
Sure. I'm going to kind of start out at the beginning, right? So I had a great childhood coming up. I joined the Army at 19 years old. I dabbled in alcohol a little bit in high school. I wouldn't say anything out of the norm. However, I realized a few things the first few times I drank. One, that I really enjoyed alcohol. It gave me this satisfaction and this feeling of fitting in, etc. I want to say up front that I don't blame the Army for my alcoholism. Nobody ever gave me a direct order or ordered me to drink alcohol. I joined the Army and my social drinking progressed pretty rapidly throughout the years to what I would say is misuse. And what I mean by that, it went, you know, from casual drinking, you know, to a few beers, to six beers, to more. And I'm not going to get into how much and what I drink, but what I will say is I drank a lot of alcohol for a long period of time. The last 5 or 6 years of my drinking career were out of control. I reached the point in my life where physically I was dependent on alcohol. And what I mean by that is I needed alcohol to function. And that's when I really realized, that was one indicator, of course, that I was needing to get help and address it. For years, I knew that I had a problem. You know, folks would tell me that I had a problem, obviously. And on top of that, the compounding part of that as well is the destruction that alcohol causes on your family life, professional life, in your personal life, really more than anything. So I got to the point to where I needed to change and I needed to stop drinking alcohol to save not only my personal life, my professional life, my personal friendships, relationships with family and friends. But at the end of the day, alcohol was controlling everything that I did in my daily life.
Sir, how did you know that you needed treatment? What were the signs there for you?
So, you know, it's interesting because I drank for so long and I was in denial for so long. You know, like I stated, I got to a point to where I couldn't function without alcohol. My wife for years, you know, I'm very fortunate, and I need to say this, that my wife and my family have supported me through this, stood by my side and been nothing but, you know, loving and supportive through this. And a lot of folks in my situation don't always have that. And, you know, for years and years and years, my wife, you know, would beg me, hey, you need to get help. You need to slow down. You need to, you know, watch what you're doing, watch your drinking. But again, I got to the point where it was having a serious impact on my family life. And I knew deep down inside that something needed to change. And that's when I knew that the only way that I had a shot at achieving sobriety was going into treatment. And I went into treatment when I was a sitting brigade sergeant major.
This is a good segue into our next question. What were the steps you took to get into treatment? Take us on that short journey.
Yeah, sure. So the day that I decided that I was going to go into treatment, like I stated, I was a brigade sergeant major. And I only say that. I don't say that to sound egotistical. I don't say that to sound cocky or anything or arrogant. I say that to say that if I could reach out and do it in that position, anybody has the ability to do it. If you're willing and you really, truly want to change, you can do it. So what I basically did is I picked up the phone and I called the ASAP folks here on Fort Leavenworth. And I said, hey, listen, I need to go into treatment, inpatient treatment, like today. I told them, I said, I don't want to do anything else. I explained to them the amount of alcohol that I was drinking, how long I'd been drinking. And they agreed. That started the journey into the treatment center. In fact, the day that I made the phone call, it was the same day that I entered into the treatment facility.
Wow. Did you have any initial doubts about going into rehab? And if you did, what were they?
So I remember this day, and I'm sure I will forever. It's one of those days that just stay here in the back of my mind forever, which is good. But I remember showing up and walking in, and my wife was with me, Erica, my wife was with me. And I walked in, and I sat down with the intake nurse, and I said, hey, listen, I'm an alcoholic. And I never said those words before. And at that moment in time, it was like the weight of the world came off my shoulders. Now, the doubts that I had, you know, I had a couple doubts and I had a couple really concerns. One, you know, I didn't know what I was getting myself into. I'd never been to a treatment center, so I didn't know what to expect. So the fear of the unknown is always was there. But I didn't know if I was really ready to quit drinking. You know, I know that sounds crazy, but I just didn't know. I think the biggest thing for me at the time was I didn't know if it was going to work. And again, I didn't know what I was getting myself into. Those were my two biggest doubts going into the treatment facility.
Was there any fear of retribution or stigma during your journey?
No, you know, there wasn't. You know, and I know some folks probably think, well, there had to have been a little bit. But at the time, there really wasn't. That was the last thing on my mind. At that point in my life, my concern was my family and my concern was my physical well-being. Now, what I'll say to folks is there is a stigma, right? And what I'll tell you is this is, you know, like I said, I'm a sitting brigade sergeant major, right? Would I have had more doubt or fear, or would I have had more concern possibly about the steps I was taking if I was a younger NCO? Probably so. You know, probably so. But at the time for me, you know, I didn't have any fear in my mind. Now, again, some folks out there might think, well, yeah, you're a sergeant major. You're probably at the end of your career. It's different for me. And what I'll tell you, too, is it's not different for you, but you gotta go get the help before something serious happens or before you find yourself in a situation that becomes punitive in nature due to indiscipline.
Wow, that's a very good point. Sir, what motivated you to come out publicly about your journey?
Yeah, so I was in treatment for about a week, and everybody in the organization knew what was going on, and they should have known, right? It's something that needed to be put out publicly. And, you know, I was sitting in treatment, and I had a thought ran through my head, well, I could come out public about this on social media. I could go through this process and not say a word. I was thinking all kinds of different scenarios in my head. And I decided, you know what, I'm just going to put it out there. You know, I had my doubts, and my doubts and my concerns really were, you know, some folks I knew were going to look at it as, hey, this individual, you know, Sergeant Major Shad's trying to get some attention out of this, that, and the other. And I knew that's a small percentage of people. And, you know, honestly, it didn't concern me much. But I knew on the other side of the fence that being in the position I was in, that it would help more people than anything. And that was my intent. That was my purpose for coming out. And I think we need to do a better job across the Army at humanizing some of these things. And I wanted to put a face to the stigma that's out there at times of alcoholism and say, hey, listen, if I'm fighting the struggle, there's other folks out there fighting the struggle, regardless of, you know, rank, et cetera, it doesn't matter. But somebody's going to see this and say, hey, it might motivate them to, you know, go get the help that they need to save their lives, save their career, et cetera, et cetera.
So true. And as the saying goes, if you've helped one soldier, you've done your part. So absolutely. Thank you so much for your courage and your transparency, sir. I want to step back into your treatment for a minute. Once in treatment, were you able to identify your triggers or what motivated you to drink excessively?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, you know, after about the first week or two, when the physical effects of the alcohol were out of my body, my head got pretty clear in a sense that I felt different physically, and it's awesome. And I really wanted to know why I drank and why I drink I did. And when I say I drank, you know, I was an everyday blackout drinker for a long time. For those that aren't familiar, blackout drinking is essentially where you drink to the point of passing out, right? But you're blacking out and you don't recall much, if anything. And so I really wanted to know, that was one of the things I wanted to know, is why do I do what I do and why have I done it for the amount of time that I've done it? Because I couldn't point to one thing in my life that caused me to do this. It just became a part of my life. I'll tell you what treatment did for me was it gave me 28 days to clear my mind, clear my body, get the alcohol out of my system. It gave me the basic prince or the basic foundation of some things that I needed in my life as far as how to handle stress, how to deal with situations in life that just come up, everyday life. But quite honestly, I wasn't able to identify the triggers until after I left treatment and I started working, and I still work in a 12-step program and continue to work with mental health professionals. But what I'll tell you is, again, the treatment center gave me the foundation I needed to begin my journey moving forward in sobriety.
So you kind of answered my next train of thought here, which was going to be, you know, what did understanding those triggers mean for you once you completed treatment? Like, how did that change your life?
Yeah. And so, you know, once you identify those triggers, and everyone's triggers are different, obviously. Everyone's story is different, right? And so once I've been able to identify those triggers through 12-step programs, professional, working with professional folks over at mental health, you know, at the end of the day, you're able to identify them, one, which you need to be able to do, and two, you know how to handle them. Whether a trigger be, you know, fear, jealousy, resentment, anger, whatever it is, You know, once you can identify them, you can handle them when they arise in your life, because they're going to, right? And when those things arise in your life that, you know, in the past I would just drink over, and a lot of times I wouldn't even realize it. It's just what I did. You know, I suppressed the emotions and feelings that I had to deal with, because that was the easy thing to do. And that's how I knew how to deal with them. So dealing with life on life's terms sober, and being able to identify my triggers that would in the past cause me to drink or just ruin my day per se, it's crucial to be able to understand those and work through those.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you for that. Can you talk to us a bit about the resources and the programming that was available for you at that time?
Yeah, like I said, you know, I picked up the phone, called the Army Substance Abuse folks here on Fort Leavenworth, and I told them what I needed help with, and they were right there. What I tell folks is, you know, the professionals that the Army has, and the professionals that we have access to, use them for what they're there for. I do know that, you know, some individuals get frustrated with what I'll call the system, for lack of better words, you know, because they're short-staffed across the board and they're doing the best they can. What I want people to understand is if you're struggling with something, whether it be alcoholism or suicide, whatever it may be, you got to be honest and transparent. They'll get you in and get you the help that you need. What I've seen a lot of soldiers do in my experience is they're struggling with something in their life, and they don't want to be honest and transparent. They're trying to get in to see a mental health provider. The mental health providers are backlogged because they're triaging and they're prioritizing cases they have. You know, they're not honest and transparent, and so that puts them out further, you know, in time to get in to see a provider. You got to be honest and transparent if you're reaching out for help. But the programming, the resources that are out there for soldiers and the family members are phenomenal. If you use them the right way, if you're honest about what you're going through, they're outstanding.
Sir, have you seen any growth or progress within the substance misuse services available to soldiers?
You know, at the end of the day, and this is my opinion, right? I think the Army needs to do a better job. The unspoken struggle is something that we talked about. I'm a firm believer that it's something we don't talk about enough. I think we still skirt around the issue. And what I mean by that is we look at suicides, you know, 22 suicides a day, over half of those alcohols involved, sexual assault, you know, cases, 80% or higher alcohols involved, and so on and so forth. And so I think we got to get better at humanizing the disease of alcoholism. One out of seven American struggles, you know, has a disease of alcoholism. So that's one out of seven soldiers or civilians in your formations that struggle with this disease. You know, I think as an enterprise, as an Army, as a military, we need to get better. You know, there's resources out there. You know, we've come a long way. We've come a long way since I've been in the Army, you know, 27 years in a lot of aspects. But I still think there's work to do. And again, I think with anything that soldiers struggle with, and again, one of the reasons that I tell my story is we got to humanize some of these things that we talk about. You know, it's awesome to have the professionals get up and give you a class or give you information. But at the end of the day, I think it resonates more with younger soldiers and senior folks if you have someone that can get up and tell their story and talk to you about something that they've struggled with themselves. And at the end of the day, put a face to the issue.
Sir, what advice would you give to a soldier currently struggling with addiction? What would you say to him or her?
Yeah. So what I would tell anybody is, you know, the last 16 months, I have 16 months sobriety now, right? What I'll tell folks is, and I tell folks this all the time when they ask me is, you know, I wasted a lot of my life in the wrath of addiction to alcohol, and I can't get that time back. And, you know, I wish I would have gotten, and I wish I would have found the strength and courage to come out and get the help that I needed a lot sooner, but I didn't. And, you know, the last 16 months of my life have been the best 16 months of my life. You know, they're challenging, but it's a life I never knew existed or I didn't know existed for a long time. What I tell anyone is quite simple. Don't wait till it's too late. Don't wait until you find yourself in a situation that you can't overcome. Don't wait until you lose, you know, things in life, being your family, career, etc. You know, reaching out for help is a sign of strength. And I think that anybody that has the courage to come forward is ahead of the game, obviously, right? But just do it and get the help you need before it's too late. Don't struggle alone. Don't alienate yourself and think you're the only one or the first person to deal with an issue that you're going through. Your life and your well-being is more important than that. And you need to have the courage, and it's not easy, but you need to have the courage to step forward, and it's going to work out for you a lot better in life than waiting, you know, who knows how long until you, or waiting until it's too late to reach out for that help.
Sergeant Major Shedd, are there any final thoughts that you would like to share with our listeners before we close?
Yeah, just a couple things. Again, I appreciate the Army Resilience Director for hosting this podcast. And I want to say to anybody out there that's listening, if you ever need help with anything, reach out. I'm here. You can find me on email, etc. But, you know, again, the biggest thing that I'll tell folks is we got to get better at identifying those folks in our formations that struggle with alcohol. You know, most of the time we know who they are. If you really know, truly know your folks, which most leaders do. And we need to stop glamorizing alcohol, right? And we need to start humanizing alcoholism and other issues that we face in the Army. And we need to be able to come forward and feel safe in an environment, which I think the Army does a great job with. If you need help, get the help you need. There's no stigma associated with getting help. And with that, that's the biggest takeaway for me, is I want people to understand and soldiers to understand at all levels that if I can do it, you can do it. Trust me. All right. And there's no stigma associated with reaching out for help.
Sir, thank you for joining us and for sharing this very necessary information with our listeners. Listeners, thank you for listening and have an amazing day. Thank you for joining this month's Army Resilience Roundup podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. Please continue to follow the Army Resilience Directorate on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Remember, stay resilient.